Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 66, recorded Friday, August 22nd, 2008. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Just one topic on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: first time in Asia, some random impressions. This week, coming to you today from the Travel Commons studio outside of Chicago, Illinois, I have done just a bit of travel since the last episode: Denver, a vacation in Thailand and Singapore, Boston, New York, a week on the Delaware shore, during which I had to fly back to Chicago for business, and now this week, Philadelphia. As I mentioned in the last episode, I cashed in a whole wad of Marriott frequent sleeper points and United miles and system upgrades to take the family to Phuket, Thailand, and Singapore. We had a great time. As a matter of fact, I may try and put together a bit of a video vacation cast on Phuket if I can get the time. Indeed, the only real hassles we had were trying to get back to Chicago from Singapore Monday. Now, our itinerary was pretty simple. Catch a 7:15 a.m. United flight from Singapore to Tokyo, hang out in Narita for 3 hours, and then catch the 6:30 United flight to Chicago to get home around 4 p.m. That's nice. I get home before I leave. Anyhow, the morning started out fine. Our flight from Singapore to Tokyo left without a hitch. But things started to go sideways as we approached Tokyo. I guess a plane departing Narita was having some difficulty on the runway, which forced us and the rest of the arriving planes to sort of cool our heels a bit in the air. No problems, though, because we had a 3-hour layover. So when we finally arrived, we passed quickly through connecting security, keeping our shoes on, by the way, but having to pull out our PC, and then walked down the concourse to do a bit of shopping. My daughter wanted another Hello Kitty charm, and my wife was looking for some unique wasabi products for her brothers. After about 30 minutes, my son and I ditched the shopping and headed to United's Red Carpet Club. I grabbed a beer and connected to the Wi-Fi to check my email, because my GSM BlackBerry didn't work in Narita. One of the emails was from United, saying that our Tokyo-Chicago flight was scheduled to leave at 8 a.m. on Tuesday, the next day. Huh? I immediately headed over to the desk. The email was correct. Apparently, some crew problem was delaying our flight to the next morning. Now, because I'm 1K on United, the top status, they had rebooked us onto the American Narita O'Hare flight, but the seats were in coach. Now, if we were willing to connect through San Francisco, we could fly business class to SFO and first class to O'Hare, getting in at about 7:30 p.m. Now, remembering how nice it was to have comfortable seats on the 13-hour O'Hare to Tokyo flight on the way over, I figured that arriving 3 hours later than originally scheduled was a small price to pay to keep our business class seats. I mean, there is a real difference. So our flight to San Francisco departed Tokyo and arrived at San Francisco on time. While taxiing to the terminal in SFO, I turned on my BlackBerry. I received 3 messages from United. Not a good sign. Our 1:29 departure to O'Hare was delayed to 2 p.m., then to 3:20 p.m., then to 3:35 p.m. Still taxiing, I turned on my phone. I called the 1K desk to see if we could get on an earlier flight. Now, the United's 1K desk is located near O'Hare, and the agent told me that the weather in Chicago was horrible. About 350 flights had been canceled, including the earlier San Francisco O'Hare flight. Our flight, our delayed flight now at 3:25 p.m., was the next San Francisco O'Hare flight. So we strolled through San Francisco passport control and customs, knowing that we had yet another 3-hour layover. We did take a bit of time to go outside. It was a cool day in the upper 60s, no humidity, a pleasant change from our 2 weeks near the equator during monsoon season. Our Chicago flight posted no further delays, but in the air about 100 miles out, the pilot told us O'Hare had shut down due to severe storms. They had cleared the control tower and moved passengers to the lower levels of the terminals because of tornado warnings. He explained that we'd be doing holding loops over Iowa for about an hour. Now, luckily, it didn't take that long. We were let out of our holding pattern early and touched down at 9:45 p.m., only about 15 minutes later than the arrival time that went with our delayed 3:35 departure, but over 5 hours later than our original 4 p.m. arrival time. Unfortunately, we still had a few hurdles to leap to get home. The airport closing had left a number of planes in the wrong places, including one in our gate. We finally got to our gate 45 minutes after we touched down, but no one was there to drive the jet bridge. Thunder and lightning that had started up while we were waiting for our gate forced all the ramp crews off the tarmac, and no jet bridge drivers wanted to work during the storm. After 15 minutes of the pilot calling everyone he knew at O'Hare, someone showed up and let us off. However, the ramp crews still were, and understandably so, inside waiting on the lightning. So we had a good 45-minute wait for our luggage. The final delay could have come in trying to get a cab home at 12:30 a.m., a pretty chaotic O'Hare, but luckily we got one without too much of a wait. We got home now around 1 a.m. Remember, our original arrival time was supposed to be 4 p.m. Of course, the piece de resistance was me setting off the house alarm because I forgot the keypad sequence to disarm it. My wife managed to shut it off before I ripped the blaring horn from the wall. If nothing else, this episode has made me a little bit more accepting of the usual 1 hour delay on my LaGuardia to O'Hare run. Following up, thanks to everyone again for being patient when July came and went without an episode. A death in my family immediately followed by 2 weeks in Asia crowded out just about every other activity. On Sunday, our last day in Singapore visiting with our friends from Chicago, the Dunns, my wife, my son, and Chris Dunn were sitting in a bar on Clark Quay, Chris and I having one last tiger beer, and the topic of this podcast came up, and when I completely botched up the tagline, "It's more about the journey than the destination," when I couldn't get that right, well, that's when I knew I needed to do a new episode or, you know, maybe cut back on the tiger beer. Well, anyhow, that night, that Sunday night before we left, Chris took the 7-hour red-eye to Tokyo on a Singapore Air A380. The last-minute booking put him in the middle of the middle section of coach at the back of the top deck of the plane. I don't know, sounded like at least the fourth ring of Dante's Inferno. And later on, after Chris, I think, had recovered, he sent me a note on his experience. Chris wrote, "I was able to get an exit row where I had some extra leg room. I moved because the guy next to me kept farting and completely gassed me out. So my big complaint in economy class is lack of air purifiers." Now, in the A380, you can do laps in the aircraft as well and pretty much do a Stairmaster workup by going up and down the levels on the circular staircase. Also in economy, each seat has actual power outlets. No cigarette or Empower adapters needed. Just plug it in and you get both 220 volts or 110 volts. Chris adds, I wish I had a true row map of the aircraft seating configuration, though, so I knew where there was extra leg room when I get stuck in coach. Business class is great for the, let's call it the belt extender crowd, because it is essentially the width of two economy seats. The video on demand service in the seats are great, and they have USB charging ports, great for charging BlackBerries, iPods, and some cell phones. They even have Open Office, the office automation suite, the Microsoft Office competitor from Sun, and they've got it online, so you can do word processing, spreadsheets, and presentations, and then save it to USB jump drive. I guess the only issue that right now is that there's no internet access. Well, Chris, thanks for that, multi-sensory report. You know, we've talked in past episodes about the smelly neighbor problem. luckily you were able to put a bit of distance between you and that fog. Hey, on the Travel Commons website, I wrote about the study claiming that 12,000 laptops are lost in airports each week. I'll tell you, that post drew a lot of comments. The research was sponsored by Dell Computer, which used the study's findings as a key selling point for their new laptop tracking and recovery service. So I think everyone is seasoning these numbers with just a few grains of salt. I don't know. I personally don't know anyone who's ever lost a PC in an airport. Now, I know people who've had them stolen out of rental cars, who've left them in the overhead bins on planes, but I don't know anyone who's lost one in an airport, which, made me a little bit suspicious about these numbers. Sean O'Neill wrote at travel.blogrs.com about a follow-up interview he did with the study author Larry Puniman. Puniman's definition of lost is a bit, I'd call it more expansive than what I think you and I would have as a common understanding of lost. That, and let's call it a rather informal interview methodology with airport employees, is what I think led to these big numbers. I'll put a link to Sean's excellent article in the show notes. Now, Arnold Hines, a Travel Commons listener, he left a comment on the website, though, about a laptop theft ring that he heard about running at London Heathrow. Arnold writes, "During busy times in the security line, people would send their laptops through the X-ray machine. Now, while they waited in line to go through the metal detector, someone else on the other end would pick up their laptop from the tray and just walk off. About four people were hit by the method in 1 week. Luckily, I wasn't one of them. After inquiring with BAA, which is the company that runs Heathrow, they confirmed that it had been an issue, but that the gang had been apprehended. No signs of the laptop, though. Apparently, they were entering the terminal on cheap tickets and somehow exiting with suitcases full of laptops." Now, Steve Frick wrote in to say that while he's never lost a laptop at the airport, he said, "Last year, one of the guys I work with left theirs at TSA security. All of us were wondering how he didn't notice that his laptop bag was suddenly 7 pounds lighter. He didn't find out till he checked into the airport that night, but he did manage to get his laptop back." Steve added, "Now, on a tech gadget side note, if you're ever in a hotel and get caught without a cell phone or laptop charger, just go down to the front desk and say, 'Last week when I was here, I think I left my phone charger in the room.' They'll pull out a box of a tangled mess of Motorola and Kyocera and ThinkPad chargers. Grab one that works and return it to the front desk in the morning." To which someone who named himself or herself Go Blue 2, I don't know, must be a University of Michigan fan, added, "In fact, some hotels will just give you stray chargers. I once forgot my BlackBerry charger, and the front desk told me to just take one of the dozens they had, as their supply would be more than replenished by the end of the week." Thanks to all you guys who left comments on that post. I'll tell you, that study and that 12,000 laptop a week number has drawn quite a bit of commentary, not only on our website but throughout the press. In past episodes, I've talked about my experiences with the CLEAR Registered Traveler program. I don't know, I've been pretty lukewarm about it. I got a free first-year membership from Marriott because I'm top-tier status platinum with them, and I've used it a couple of times at San Francisco Airport. No bad experiences, but nothing compelling enough to make me want to pay $100 when this free year is up. Now, while I was over in Asia, Ray Medina was the first to point me toward the news that CLEAR had lost a laptop at San Francisco containing personal information on 33,000 applicants: names, addresses, birth dates, and in some cases, driver's license, passport, or green card numbers, but not the biometrics, no fingerprints or iris images that are used at the checkpoints. A few days later, I returned the favor to Ray, twittering him with the news that they'd found the laptop in the same room at San Francisco Airport. It was kind of like when your kid can't find something in her room because she didn't put it back where it belonged. It was supposed to be in this desk, but someone moved it over to another desk. I mean, how big is this room? And given that CLEAR had to report this to the TSA, you'd think they would have stripped that room bare before they hit the big red button. I don't know, something doesn't smell quite right here. Now, when I got back home from Asia, I received an email from Clear's CEO explaining in bold underlined letters that none of my personal information was on the laptop, and after preliminary investigation, it was determined that no unauthorized person had access to the information that was on the laptop. Later on in the note, we find out that while the laptop was password protected, the data on the hard drive was not encrypted. Now, this is the part that's a bit concerning. I mean, even before the 12,000 laptops lost a week study, there were all sorts of stories about stolen laptops full of customer or employee information. First, you got to wonder why that information is on a laptop hard drive. I mean, wouldn't it be more secure on a server locked away in a data center that then you sort of get access to through the network? And if you have to have that data stored on something that can easily walk away, like a laptop, that's what they're designed to do, why wouldn't you invest a couple of $100s in encryption software? Now, as it is, Clear has now suspended, or through that time, suspended their enrollment process, which I gotta think has cost them more in business than just a couple of $100 it would have cost to encrypt the hard drive. Well, anyhow, if you have a link, a story, a comment, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The website is comments@travelcommons.com, or you can post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Well, the only topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, because I took so much time in the first two segments, is random impressions from my first time to Asia. Now, prior to this trip to Thailand and Singapore, I had never been to Asia, and it seemed like a pretty big hole in my and my family's travel experiences. Now, I understand that Phuket and Singapore are really more like Asia light. But you got to start somewhere. And rather than dropping my family into the deep end, say in the middle of Bangkok or Hanoi, we decided to play around in the shallow end of the pool for a bit. The first thing that struck me was the complete loss of a day. We left Chicago at 1 on Thursday afternoon and arrived in Singapore at midnight Friday night. I mean, where did Friday go? And when we got there, the Singapore airport, their Terminal 3, is beautiful. And at midnight on a Friday night, it was empty. We glided through immigration, quickly picked up our luggage, and hopped into a cab for overnight at the Marriott downtown. And in the darkness, Singapore seemed, I don't know, just like a more humid version of New York, where everyone drives on the wrong side of the road. The next afternoon, we were back at the airport to catch an Air Asia flight to Phuket. A little bit of come down from United's business class, but you got to try everything. Air Asia describes themselves as a no-frill airline, and they are, making Southwest look a little extravagant, from the boarding passes printed out on credit card receipt paper to the a la carte pricing for everything on board, including water. They've even downscaled the boarding process. Now, if Southwest has cattle car boarding, then I'll tell you, Air Asia's is stampede boarding. So our little boarding passes each had a sequence number, which I thought they'd use to create boarding groups, just like every other budget carrier. Nope, sitting in the gate area, it was pretty much a "we're boarding now" announcement and a race to the door. Luckily, my son and daughter were paying attention and got us in sort of the front third of the boarding scrum. Not a bad flight that once you got on it, but I don't know, the getting on was a little bumpy. Once in Phuket, the ride from the airport to the resort confirmed my decision not to rent a car. It wasn't driving on the left-hand side of the road, that's not a problem, and it wasn't navigating through the waves of motor scooters at each traffic light. That looked a little dodgier, but I figured I could handle that. It was that I couldn't read any of the road signs. I mean, the Thais have their own alphabet that, to the uneducated eye, looks like a lot of scribbling and curlicues with, a couple of dots hanging around. I mean, they've even got their own numbers. So we spent a lot of time in cabs, and on most of the rides, because my wife and two kids were in the back seat, I ended up riding shotgun and so would end up making some small talk with the driver. Older drivers tended to have less English, so the talk was a bit smaller. But on one day, we ended up with a 20-something guy driving, driving a nice new Toyota. And after a bit of chit-chat, the driver asked where we were from. America, I said. Chicago. And I saw a glint of recognition, so I was waiting. Okay, young guy. I'm probably going to get the Michael Jordan reference. He looks a bit too young to give me sort of the gangster Al Capone thing. He looked at me and said, Chicago, isn't that where Barack Obama is from? Now, I didn't see that one coming. Perhaps because I've tuned out U.S. presidential politics because the primary season is just so long. But now, driving through the back roads of northern Phuket to find a restaurant stuck out on a pier in a channel between the island and the mainland, I'm now getting into a detailed discussion of Barack Obama and John McCain with a Thai taxi driver. It just pulled me up short. But isn't that why most of us travel? Even when we travel for business every week, why we still travel for pleasure, for those moments that sort of snap us to a new place, a new perspective. I don't know, maybe it took me traveling to the other side of the world to realize, how important this presidential election is. And so, that encounter, the depth of the driver's interest on something that nominally wouldn't seem to affect him, is one of the biggest impressions from our trip, second only to eating durian fruit one night at a roadside stand in Singapore, experiencing durian, which some call the king of fruit, but which Chef Anthony Bourdain from Kitchen Confidential and the Travel Channel, a couple other TV shows, Bourdain says, he says durian will leave your breath smelling like, in his words, you've been French kissing your dead grandmother. Well, not even Barack Obama can top that experience. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 66. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music is from Magnatunes, the We Are Not Evil label. Nice motto. First song, Planeten Staaten. I don't know. It's German. By Philipp Weigel. I'm sorry, Philip. I just butchered the name of a nice song. And The Collider by C. Lane. Check out the show notes for links. And because obviously my pronunciation, you won't be able to find them. And thanks for hanging through what was an unexpectedly long break between podcasts. It's never my intent to have more than a month pass between shows, but sometimes, as one listener told me, life gets in the way. Hey, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails, audio files, or post comments on the website. Okay, I promise this time I will get a show out in September. But until then, take care, travel safe. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now. Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind, no home woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling,